Blog Talk Radio.
It is a marvelous Monday. Welcome to Markman Madness on Blog Talk Radio, driven by Mancini Media. I'm Mark Heffernan. How are you doing today? Our number is 347-205-9631. 347-205-9631. You can contact me via email at sportswrapnet@yahoo.com. SPORTSRAPNET at yahoo.com. Okay, yesterday, great performance by the Clippers as they went at home, Staples Center, 126-111 over the Dallas Mavericks. Game 7, the key, you know, the Mavs were ahead 81-76 in that game, then the Clippers just kind of went on about a 21-4 run led by Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and company. Kawhi, his second outstanding game in the series. He had 45, hit down about three big threes late in Game 6. Yesterday, a fine game for him, 28 points, 10 rebounds, 9 assists, 4 steals. Luka Doncic, trying to do it all for Dallas. They're not getting much support from his teammates over the past two games, especially defensively. 46 points, 7 rebounds, 14 assists. He had 5 of 16 threes, Luka, but he needs help. Anyway, the keys were the second and third quarter. The Clippers now scored Dallas 35-24 in the second and 30-23 in the third, basically even in the fourth, 26-26. So a 15-point victory by the Clippers. And the key was how they did late in the third quarter through the beginning of the fourth. That's when they kind of separated in that game. So they will take on number one seed Utah Tuesday at 7 p.m. in the semis. Utah beat favored by 4 points in game one. Tonight, number three Denver is taking on number two Phoenix. Should be a good series. Devin Booker, the top player for Phoenix. And Nikola Jokic, the Joker, the top guy for Denver, the center who does it all. You're not really going to stop either player. It's a matter of containing them and just beating the other team. Both teams can score, so I expect a high-scoring series. The LA Clippers, the Jazz, Nuggets, and Suns, none have won an NBA championship. Maybe one of them will this year. Clippers, Jazz, Nuggets, and Suns. Okay, right now in the East, the Brooklyn Nets lead Milwaukee Bucks 1-0 in that best-of-seven series. Now, the half of it is Brooklyn 65, Milwaukee 41. A lot of it, Kevin Durant and all KD, 21 points. I think he missed about three shots. That's it in the first half. But James doing well, Blake Griffin, Kyrie Irving, really a complete effort for Brooklyn. They scored 66 points in game one, 65 tonight, and I'll tell you what, Milwaukee just hasn't showed up. I mean, I don't expect them to beat Brooklyn. I do expect them to play a little better. And they were down, I think it was like 61-33. You wouldn't think the Lakers were playing without Anthony Davis. But Milwaukee doesn't have any guys hurt. Middleton hit, I think, three shots late. He was 0 for his first eight. Not getting down court, getting out hustling on loose balls, not making shots, not guarding the perimeter. There's too much Brooklyn, and James Harden is not playing. He got hurt, seconds into game one with his hamstring. He's not playing tonight, so it's basically Kyrie, KD, and the rest of the guys, and they haven't missed a beat, 65-41. Major League Baseball, Casey is at the Angels, Cubs at San Diego, Miami at Boston. UCLA Baseball finished up at 37-20, and the Lubbock Regional in Texas, they lost to North Carolina 5-4, beat Army 13-6. I saw the game against North Carolina where they won 12-2. Then they lost to Texas Tech in the final 8-2. Number two seed UCLA Bruins in softball lost to Bama 6-0. There were no hit. Did not even get a player on base in the game. A perfect game from by the Bama pitcher. And then they lost to Oklahoma 10-3. So they were outscored 16-3 in back-to-back losses in the Women's College World Series. UCLA won the championship in 2019. And, of course, they were not able to play any playoffs or anything in 2020. Had a lot of the same players on the team. Some came back as six-year seniors or fifth-year juniors, but nevertheless, I didn't feel that the UCLA women had a hunger, and I felt they were too satisfied to do anything in the playoffs. They didn't really perform well in the regional or super regionals in L.A., so they didn't come into the World Series a hot team. They beat Florida State 4-0. Rachel Garcia pitched well in that game, but for some reason, she was off her game. Now, she's facing better hitting teams in Bama and Oklahoma, but I didn't care for lack of velocity in her fastball. She wasn't moving the ball around the plate. And she's going to be one of the pitchers for the USA Olympic team. She better get some rest and shape up her game because I don't want her being number one or number two on the USA Olympic team, even though she was MVP 2019, has been a college player of the year. She doesn't look sharp. Something's wrong with her. Maybe she's overworked, pitching more than 200 innings. The number two pitcher was hurt and didn't make the trip, so UCLA did not have any depth. I mean, you put a team together like that, you got to have more depth, coach. Come on. Well, I have more than Maya Brady, who's the best athlete on the team. She's a redshirt freshman this year. 14 home runs, she'll be back, but they need to do some better recruiting at UCLA. Okay, National League West. The Padres are in second, the Dodgers in third. San Diego 36-25, and the Dodgers at 34-25. And, of course, that division being led by the San Francisco Giants. Okay, he's the owner of YSN365.com, the Youth Sports Network. He is Dave Cox. And welcome to Markman Madness. How are you?
Doing good today, Mark. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, tell us about Youth Sports Network. Did you form it in 2009, or you just been working for the company?
I formed this, I think it was more like 2008, and came out of kind of necessity to cover local sports here in the area that I live in, which is Sonoma County and really all of Northern California. I had previously worked for Comcast and done local and regional sports for them, as well as stuff in the Bay Area, college basketball, things like that, USF, Stanford, Cal. But nobody was covering the local stuff when Comcast decided to kind of pull the plug on it. And so I said, man, let's start a website. I had a couple other guys help me put the website together. And we started doing video highlights because at that time I felt like that's all that people's attention span would be able to handle on an internet site would maybe be 4 or 5 minutes of highlights as opposed to a full game, which is what I did for the previous 17 years. But now things have really changed. I'm live streaming full games with multi-camera. We have our own Roku channel, and it is hugely popular. So in that 12, 13 years' time, the market and the viewership has totally changed. But it's great. I love doing it.
So you're primarily in the Sonoma area. Are you familiar with NorCal Sports TV or Bay Area Sports Online?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Bay Area Online Sports, BAOSN, Jim Petromilli and I partner on a lot of things. We work together on a lot of stuff. I also work a lot with on-site TV over in the Sacramento area. I produce the Sac State football games, UC Davis, every once in a while Cal Poly. So, yeah, we're all pretty familiar, and we work together whenever we can. We combine resources, personnel, camera operators, equipment, whatever we need to do the job. But, yeah, it's pretty cool.
We can talk about doing – you're talking about Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, quite a ways from Sonoma.
Yes, it is. Yeah, we just did a spring football game before they pulled the plug on football. But I've been down there a couple years to do games for 11 sports. So we brought our production down from up here to do games on 11 sports, which is how I initially got involved with the Sac State games, and it kind of developed from there.
I guess Bay Sports TV, I think, is where my sister lives. She's in El Sabrante over by San Pablo, and I know they do quite a few gigs there with Contra Costa, and she's not far from that area. So I haven't done anything with them, but I know the gentleman who runs it, and I did some things
Banks,
with
San Mateo Banks,
Bay Area Online Sports TV, did a few things for them. Modesto football, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, and did a couple of PA stuff. But primarily, if I do anything in Northern California, not necessarily, it's with NorCal Sports TV, but a lot of things I do with them is based here in the Central Valley. It could be in Fresno, Visalia, or Tulare. I did a few Modesto things with him, so they're kind of expanding too. But more of the things I do are with the NHHS Network section championships in a variety of sports. So I kind of meander around here and there. And, of course, I want to ask you, how did COVID-19 affect you in 2020? How many events did you cover last year?
Well, it was devastating. You know, I had actually been working the previous year for Sonoma State University, live streaming all their sports. And we got sent home in March, and about the middle of March when COVID hit. And that was it. You know, there wasn't any events happening. They didn't renew my contract in October. There was no sports happening. So I had nothing I could do for YSN other than our day-to-day articles that we post and things like that, keeping track of everything that was going on. And golf, we do an article called Golf 707. My golf writer, Bruce Meadows, had kept – and golf was exploding at the time because of COVID. And then, lo and behold, when sports started back up, February, March this year, all of a sudden I was super busy again, and we were getting 5,000, 6,000 viewers for football games we were doing. And I did a little bit of everything, some basketball, softball, baseball, soccer, volleyball, you name it. Everybody wanted their stuff streamed because there was a limited amount of fans that could attend the games.
Well, you know, as far as football, do you think it was very competitive this spring with some of the teams? Now, you like I said, you streamed some of the games. And some of the teams that are normally good in the fall were, but I saw some teams that were normally decent that basically were pretty mediocre. I'm not sure all the players came out for the teams or what was going on. Maybe they have some COVID issues, but it seemed like a very strange year. I know, like my area, the Central Valley, a lot of teams played 5 or 6 games, and some of the teams that are normally top-notch were bad, and some teams that are, like, average were about average. It's just kind of odd how it worked out. And I was, and the thing is, some of the sports were going on simultaneously. So some guys, maybe baseball or another sport with their number one sport, didn't play football. But generally, if football is your primary sport, you're going to play that. But I do a lot of teams in Liberty High and Bakersfield, and a lot of the sports kind of mesh. But they have a lot of kids who just play one sport because they're in club and travel and things like that. But smaller high schools in Bakersfield, most of their kids play 2 and 3 sports during the regular school year. So they were really hurt by COVID because you only have so many student athletes. And so, like, for some of the basketball teams, they're not normally that good. We have, like, multi-sport dudes. They have, like, 8 and 9 players to a team. Another thing that's really weird, we're having our Central Section playoffs now in basketball. And it's really odd because a lot of teams in Bakersfield only played, like, 8 or 9 games in the regular season. And the teams in the Fresno Close area, which is not far from – I'm from Bakersfield, but I cover Fresno Bakersfield. San Joaquin Memorial, you know, number one in open division, Clovis North, Clovis West, and then on the coast, St. Joe's. Those teams have played over 20 games. And the teams here in Bakersfield, the only one school has played a lot of games. That's Bakersfield Christian. They're like 17 and 11. Everybody else has played between 6 and 10. And then the teams in the north played over 20. To me, that's a big advantage. And BCHS, the Christian school, number one Division III in the section, really, to me, is the best overall team in Bakersfield. They played a monster schedule. I was checking it out last night. They were 17-11. They played San Joaquin Memorial twice and lost both times. They beat Clovis West twice. They I think they split with Clovis North, and then they lost to St. Joe's on the coast twice. But all 4 teams they played are you know, the top in the whole valley. I mean, the other teams they played were very strong. So they could have had a nice, easy schedule and put up wins. But it's amazing they were able, at this point, to play 28 games, and nobody else has played more than 10 or 11 in the area. And I don't know how many they played in town or out of town. It's just kind of strange how they were able to get off so many games. They're a private school, but nobody else. Like, I do Liberty. Liberty only played, like, 9 games or 8-1. And their playoff game last Friday was canceled because a Liberty player tested positive for COVID-19. And that was a playoff game. They were supposed to play at Royal Grande. Liberty was number 4 in Division 1, and Royal Grande was number 5, and that was canceled. And then the last 2 games they played in the regular season was against Independence here in Bakersfield. And they beat Indy back-to-back. But I guess a player for Liberty tested positive the night of that last game. And so not only was the Liberty game canceled, but Independence, who was in Division 2, a second seed, their game was canceled, and their coach and a few people were mad at Liberty and blah, 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 because, you know, it wasn't because of us. We're not playing the game. It's because of Liberty, and it's really weird. I mean, I do things a lot of different high schools, so I hear a lot of that stuff. And I don't know what happened. I don't know about the contract tracing. My son contracted COVID about a week ago, and he worked at a restaurant for a long time, and he has another job and goes to school. And he and his girlfriend both contracted it, and so he's been down for about a week, but he's doing better. And the thing is, you don't have any cases in California now like you had anywhere from 4 to 5 months ago, and yet he got it. So, I did that game. A player for Liberty, I don't know, I guess he took the test, and they find out a couple of days later. So I guess they found out Thursday night that he had COVID, and then they played Independence Thursday. I was there at the game. And then Independence was, you know, very upset they couldn't play. But Liberty had 2 other games scheduled against Bakersfield High that were canceled, because a girls player for BHS tested positive. So we were playing double hitters this year, girls followed by boys. So what we're doing in that league is they're playing the same team, same school, back-to-back days, Wednesday and Thursday. And so I had a few games taken away from me, but not really that big of a deal. But I don't know if there's any way that you could just be perfect and do everything perfect and things, and nobody's going to get COVID. The coach of that one school acted like Liberty was negligent about it and everything. I don't really know the case. I mean, I work for Liberty, but I don't know if they were necessarily negligent on that. I mean, a lot of people throw out, you know, they throw arrows out and things like that because they're not. But here's the whole thing. I don't think Independence was that good this year. They won the Division II championship last year in the game that I did, and they had some of the same players that returned. They didn't impress me against Liberty in those two games. I mean, they only had like about nine players on the team. And the reason why they lost is Liberty had more depth. Liberty plays with about 14 or 15 players. So they were saying they were looking forward to defending their Division II title. That's fine. They didn't look like they were a team that was defending any championship this year. That's all I'm saying. And I'm the type of guy pretty much says it like it is. But to throw arrows at a school that I work for, I think it's a little bit weak from that. And I've done stuff at that school too. So I guess it's just a way for people to get, you know, pumped up when they play that team again the following year. But I don't think there's any way to prevent COVID from spreading. I think you can do a lot of things right. I mean, every game I've done at Liberty this year, they take my temperature. Every game, basketball or baseball. Whether it was 105 degrees like last week or 85. And I've worn a mask most of the time. I have a mask on. I lower it when I announce baseball. I'm kind of away from people. And when I announce basketball. And that's what I've done. So, and I've been vaccinated twice. So I've done my bit, but there's no 100% pure-proof plan in place. So my rant's
over
on that.
Yeah, no question. And the private
I don't know if they do it at high school. I guess they tested them twice per week. I'm not really sure. I don't know what day of the week they tested them. It's just something unfortunate that happened. And I don't think that Liberty is really negligent. I don't really know, but I mean, they're nice to me. It seemed like they do everything properly. I've been a part of a lot of those games that they've done, and like I said, they test me all the time, just like anybody else. Anybody that comes through the baseball, they test you, and you walk in. Basketball, the same thing. So there could have been some people in the stands that had it. I mean, I don't know. It's an invisible virus. It's a very evil, and it's been around for a long time. It hasn't gone away. A lot of people act like it's dissipated entirely. No, it hasn't dissipated entirely. People are still getting COVID, not as much as before. And as you know, they're going to open up California June 15th, and somebody was asking me a question, do you think that's a good idea? I said, well, I think it's a good idea to expand it. I don't know if we should open it up all the way because I think it should be more gradual. But you have two different perceptions of that. Some people thought we should have opened up California 4 months ago, but some people never wear masks, and they get upset if somebody tells them to wear a mask. I know some people that are not going to get the vaccination at all. I know quite a few people like that. And it's government interference and blah, blah, blah. Then there's other people that say, you've got to get the vaccination. So I kind of run back and forth. But I don't think there's any foolproof plan in place. Sometimes just the way that it is. And you just kind of have to live with it. And they asked the other question, this poll, do you think that the state will officially go back to normal June 15th? I said, no. That's just one date. I think we're on our way back there, but I can't say we're back to normal. But I've been going to restaurants, indoors for the last 3 or 4 months here in town. And I, like I said, been supporting events since March. How's it affected you in the Sonoma area? Because you're doing a lot of events there, you know, football, basketball, a lot of things simultaneously during the spring. How obviously you're happy to be doing things as opposed to not doing anything like last 2020. When do you expect? Do you have any idea when things will somewhat get 95% normal in the state?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be gradual, like you said. I think, you know, opening things up a little bit more on June 5th will be a good step in the right direction. Unless we have a spike up. If it starts to spike up after they open things up, then they're going to shut things down again. But we've been affected. I have to be really flexible. The schedule changes almost on a daily basis. We've had games canceled. Games get canceled if one kid gets COVID from a school that played another team, then that other team has to be quarantined as well as the team he's on. And if they're playing a game later against, you know, so it cancels the game that's later that week. And we've had false positives. Kids get tested. They're positive. They retest. They're negative. And then the games are back on. So you really have to be flexible. It's been very interesting. And it's been hard on everybody, the coaches, the parents, the kids, and people like us, you know, the fringe people that people don't really think about are the media and the referees who are affected by all this, you know, and they have to be flexible. And I've seen the referees have to wear masks and then take them off during the game, but then put them back on during timeouts. And like I said, I don't wear a mask when I'm announcing a game. I can't wear a mask while I'm announcing, and I've been vaccinated. So, you know, I'm not concerned about it as much. I understand other people's fear around it. But I think for the kids, they're a very low-risk group. Even if they get COVID, their odds of dying from it are super slim because they're in great shape. They're athletes, you know. They're doing their thing, you know. And I think in some cases, the way they've been treated is a little bit unfair because I think, like I said, they're very low risk. A lot of the outdoor sports, especially, you know, they should be able to participate as much as possible. And if you feel unsafe and if you don't want to be a part of it, then you don't play. You know, it's simple as that. We've had kids quit football because they're on a baseball scholarship, you know, and they're playing baseball and football at the same time. So the quality of play has definitely been affected. The private schools are able to function and practice, you know, way back as far as June, whereas the public schools had all these restrictions put on them and they couldn't participate. They can't have JV and freshman teams. And so the playing field is definitely not level in terms of that. I think it's great the kids got to participate at all. I think that was a really good thing. We don't even have playoffs up here. You know, they've said no playoffs at all. So I'm kind of jealous that you guys get to have playoffs. And I feel sorry for the seniors who really got their careers cut short. The ones that are going on and playing in college, they'll get over it. But the seniors I feel sorry for are the ones who aren't going to play beyond high school, you know, that they're not going to have had a full season or they're not going to be able to participate in playoffs. Or in some cases, they didn't get to play at all. And I think that's sad.
Dave Cox from U Sports Network, my guest on Markman Madness. Our number is 347-205-9631. I'm Mark Heffernan. He worked at Sonoma State Athletic Communications and Marketing 2019 and 20. He also did play-by-play and production at KSRO in Santa Rosa, 1350, 103.5, 94.5. That was for about 4 years. What was it like working at KSRO? I've heard quite a few things about that station, very positive.
Well, I came in as an independent and produced high school sports for them and did radio. I've done – my background is in television, and as you know, when you're setting up television cameras and intercom and audio, and it can be very challenging, especially at the local level. And I always said, man, I should get into radio. There's a lot less wires to hook up. And I really enjoyed it. It was a lot simpler, man. It was very simple. We ended up simulcasting a lot of the games also on my website with video. So, of course, I had to complicate it. But doing the radio was cool. You know, I didn't have a lot of interaction with them other than on Fridays I would go and pick up some of the equipment and I would head off to my games. I put the schedule together, I produced everything, and basically they aired it. So it was kind of a good deal. I'm sad that they didn't want to do it anymore, but they got involved with the Raiders and the Warriors, and there was a lot of conflicts on Fridays, so they kind of backed off on that schedule a little bit.
So in the Bay Area, they're still doing a lot of Raiders stuff, right? You know, the Raiders are in Las Vegas. There's a lot of stations in the Bay Area are still kind of hung up on the Raiders. You know, they're kind of
I'm not sure if they're going to do that again this year. But, yeah, they had been doing it for, you know, up until they left. And I think they still did the games last year, even though they were in Las Vegas. But that'll probably slowly dissipate. You know, that'll go away after a while.
Well, Dave, you know, here in the Bakersfield area, one station airs the Raiders. And another station airs the Chargers, but not the Rams. They aired the Rams for a couple of years when Todd Gurley was playing. Then they switched to the Chargers. Well, I think I heard a couple of Rams games last year. I think they messed up. I don't know what. I only heard about two Rams games on radio, so I watched most of the games on TV. Or don't watch them at all. And then, but the Raiders were on a regular station, so with Musburger. So it's. And then I think, I don't know if the Niners are on a station here in the area. They might be. We have a lot of San Francisco 49ers fans down here in Central California. Probably more Niners fans than Rams fans because Rams have been here and there, you know, L.A., Anaheim, St. Louis, back to L.A., and they haven't necessarily won, even though they got to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. Their organization is just okay. Have a great facility to play in, just don't have enough outstanding players. And we'll see what they do next year with the quarterback, you know, they got from Detroit. But another thing I noticed, were you the head baseball coach at Sonoma Academy in Santa Rosa?
Yes, I was for 5 years.
Fantastic. How many years?
Yeah. I was there for 5 years up until taking the job at Sonoma State. I couldn't do both, so push came to shove, I gave that up reluctantly. I mean, I love coaching. I've coached baseball for 30 years and at all levels, everything from college down to T-ball, literally. But the high school, I really enjoyed working with those kids, and we had a lot of fun for those years.
Well, do you like coaching better than broadcasting?
You know, that's a tough question. The great thing about broadcasting is you don't get as hung up on the wins and losses after the game.
Right.
And kind of let it all go. But coaching, you know, when the game doesn't go well, you lose a game that you thought you should have won, man, it can stick with you for days and days and days. Yeah. And so I guess the emotional highs and lows are a little tougher to deal with in terms of coaching. But, you know, and it's a lot of work, man. Coaching high school baseball, you're with the kids every day for 3 or 4 hours. I was on campus every day. I also taught PE classes while I was doing that. So it's a huge time commitment. And, you know, the broadcasting of the games is a lot of fun. I've been, you know, since I was a little kid, I always did play-by-play, even in my backyard while I was just goofing around. So that was kind of something that came kind of naturally to me. And coaching, like I said, the emotional roller coaster that's involved with it on the wins and losses makes it, I think, a little bit tougher.
Well, you know, I coached when my kids were very young. I didn't really like coaching that much, and I guess primarily because I like coaching people that have talent. So it's very difficult for me even to coach youngsters that you tell them what to do and they can't do it. And I'm relying on somebody else to make me look good. As far as a broadcaster, it's more on me as long as everything's working properly. And, you know, I played baseball through college and everything, but I always felt I was going to be a much better broadcaster than a baseball player. And I was thinking about that when I was a freshman or sophomore in high school, even though I was one of the better players. It didn't really, I would have liked to have been a better player in college, but I knew it would end someday. And in my back of my mind, I was always going to be a broadcaster, even when I was 8 years old. That was something that I told my brother, we've had conversations, you know, recently I told Dennis, I've always been a better broadcaster than I was as a baseball player. Even when I had 20 stolen bases that 1 year, no big deal to me. It wouldn't last as long. Something else is in my heart. I could have done broadcasting many years before, but when I was coming up, like 150 years ago, there wasn't even live streaming. They didn't hire teenage guys to do PA because I was busy playing. So it's just a lot different now, but I knew I'd do that eventually. And that was in my heart, and baseball and sports, something I did for a time, and I work out all the time now, but it's totally different. So I like broadcasting much better than playing and also coaching. And that may sound strange to some people, but it's really true. I like playing baseball more than broadcasting baseball, but I probably like broadcasting and announcing football and basketball and other sports as much as playing baseball. But when you look at the baseball, I enjoy playing it more than actually broadcasting it. Because when you're broadcasting, the game's very slow, but when you're playing it, it's not as slow. When you're looking at a game from the stands, sometimes it's very melancholy. There's not a lot going on. But if you're a shortstop or second baseman, you're looking at the game from a different perspective, looking towards home plate, your mind's always moving. And you're always moving left and right and everything. So I never thought baseball was a boring sport when I played it. But when I've gone to a lot of games, it's kind of like very laid back. And I thought, gee, I've never seen this way when I was out there playing, even when I was in the dugout. So that was always kind of something that was, I thought was kind of odd and going back, I don't know, 25, 30 years ago. At any rate, are you from Southern California? Didn't you attend Pepperdine University, the Waves?
Yes, I did. I lived down there for around 6 years after high school up here. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I liked the area a lot, especially that North Valley area. I ended up living in the Agora Hills area and Thousand Oaks and all that. I really like that part of L.A. It's cool.
Pepperdine, the NCAA golf champions. Give it up for the Waves.
Yeah, I just watched a little bit of that. That was pretty cool. They were having that match play against Oklahoma, and that was really that was nice to see the Waves get some national recognition. They've done really well in baseball over the years, but and golf too. They've been pretty good in golf too over the years. So yeah, that was good.
Well, I have some friends that work and live in Arizona, so I was giving them the view because the Lakers were not looking too good. I was telling them, "Go Waves, go Waves." And I don't watch golf that much, but then after they won, they go, hey, that's really cool. I said, I got nothing to do with their victory, but I'm glad that they got a championship because I know Pepperdine has won a lot of championships over the years, but they're a very good school. And people hear about USC and UCLA and San Diego State. There's a lot of colleges in Southern Cal people have never heard of. There's so many.
True.
But, you know, like four or five schools get all the publicity all the time. There's outstanding athletes at so many colleges and universities in Southern California. And a great job for the Waves to get a victory there. And like you said, get some exposure for their school. And outstanding, man. Nothing wrong with that. Now, did you coach or play at Cardinal Newman?
Both. Yeah, I played there when I was in high school.
I don't always explain my notes to myself. And that's a school I'm very familiar with. You know, they're kind of have a lot of name recognition even here in the Central Valley. Tell me about your experience at Cardinal Newman.
Well, I played there back in the 70s, football, baseball, and basketball, and we actually had the state for the most wins in a row back then. My senior year, we had to win our first game of the year to have our 47th win in a row, which at that time set the state record. Of course, De La Salle has shattered that in later years, but that was kind of a big deal back in the fall of 1977. Then we lost our next game. It was the first time the school had lost in around 5 years, so that was kind of a big deal. I went back there, and I coached JV baseball there for a few years, and my son played baseball there, graduated in 2017. He's now down at Santa Barbara City College, but he played baseball there, so that was really cool. I didn't get to see a lot of his games because I was coaching at Sonoma Academy while he was playing at Cardinal Newman, so that was kind of a bummer. But their football team has been really good the last few years. You know, they won the state championship in 2019. They were just named the Division III team of the year this year in football for the spring that they just finished. So that was kind of cool. And we covered all of their home games and a couple of their away games as well on YSN365.com.
Santa Barbara City College, the school right by the beach there in Santa Barbara. Love it.
Yes. Yeah, really nice. And he kind of took up surfing lately. So he's been doing a lot of surfing, hooked up with a friend of mine from Pepperdine, John LaLanne, who is a pro surfer. And he built him a surfboard, and he has been hitting the waves a lot. He works at a surf shop down there, too. So that's pretty cool.
Do you like to surf yourself?
Never. I body surfed. I tried surfing once when I was at Pepperdine, and I couldn't get up, and I just never really put a lot of time into it, you know. So a lot of body surfing,
like
but
me.
I've never really done the surfing thing. So, yeah, he's lucky that he's good at it, and he's making surfboards now and works at the Beach House Surf Shop in Santa Barbara, and he's getting really good at it.
Hey, man, it sounds
so,
like a life, man. Working at a
fun.
Surf shop in Santa Barbara? Wow, that's cool.
I know. Of course, I miss him playing baseball. He was a pitcher. He was a right-handed pitcher. And I'm trying to talk him into coming up and playing a little for the college Woodbat team up here this summer and get back into pitching because he was really good at it. But, you know, I understand. I get it.
Yeah. Ted Cox, my guest on Markman Madness on Blog Talk Radio, driven by Mancini Media. Our number, 347-205-9631, 347-205-9631. Dave, how can people get in touch with you?
My Facebook page, you can always leave a message there. YSN365 has a Facebook page. They can also email me at ysx5@gmail.com. And my cell phone number is also on the Facebook page and contact information on the website, ysn365.com. Some of the cool aspects of our website, we do a lot of live streaming of recent stuff, but I've also got an archive of over 1,000 games that I produced and announced over the years while I was at Comcast. They're in a lot of boxes in my garage, but I've digitized about 200 of them. And on the homepage of YSN, we have what's called the Game of the Week Classic area, and randomly some of those games show up, and they're always streaming live. They're not on demand. It's always going live. But I'm going to start adding those now that I have a Roku channel. I'm going to start uploading those to my Roku channel, which is really going to be cool. I have CC Sabathia playing basketball for Vallejo back when he was in high school. I have Tom Brady when he played for Sarah playing against Cardinal Newman back in 1994. I've got just some unbelievable games, historic stuff, all in boxes in my garage. Like I said, we're going to continue digitizing them and uploading them to the Roku channel as soon as we can.
How do you convert them into digital media, some of those games?
You have to have an analog to digital converter, a USB, that'll plug into a computer. And then there's a couple apps that you can get. And you basically hit record on your computer. You hit play on the tape deck. And you have to, in real time, load it on there and record it onto the computer. It's a painstakingly long process. Once it's digitized as a file, an MP4 file, then you can upload it to YouTube or whatever. Like, so I'm going to upload it to our Roku channel. So
that's amazing.
That's how you do it.
Hey, thanks.
So
a lot for being on the program. Dave Cox, take care. Yeah, take care.
All right.
I'll stay in touch, man.
Sounds good.
All
Mark.
Right.
All right. We'll see
you. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye now.
And this is Mark Heffernan on Markman Madness on Blog Talk Radio, driven by Mancini Media. Mark Mancini is our producer. at our number 347-205-9631, 347-205-9631. You can get in touch with me by going to my, at least one of my email sites, sportswrapnet@yahoo.com, S-P-O-R-T-S-R-A-P-N-E-T at yahoo.com. Okay, well, today we were supposed to have another guest on the program, but I guess at this point, yes, that person is not quite there, so I'm just checking out and see what's going on. Looking at now, so if I live in the central section, that's between Bakersfield and Fresno Clovis, and also along the central coast, San Luis Obispo High, Arroyo Grande, Paso Robles, things like that. So there are some very good basketball teams, boys teams, in the area. And like I was talking to Dave, the teams in the Fresno Clovis area, the top teams, have played many games this year. Clovis West is 18-3. San Joaquin Memorial Fresno, 21-1. St. Joe's of Santa Maria, 25-2, and Clovis North, 18-3. Now, the school that I announced for Liberty was 8-1. They cannot partake in their playoff game about a little over a week ago because a player tested positive for COVID-19 on the day that they have their final regular season game against Independence. They played them back-to-back. Centennial was ended up 5-2. They lost by 1 point in a Division II playoff game. Centennial was the number one seed in Division II here in the section, and Independence was number two in Division II. Liberty was number four in Division I. Now, they play in the same league, the Southwest Yosemite League, and they don't put you in different divisions based on your population. They do it because of competitive equity. Liberty's had better teams over the past 5 years, so they play in Division I. Liberty doesn't play Division II in that many sports. The girls were in Division II, and they lost to Ridgeview on the road. So, but a school that has had a fantastic year and very good in sports and football and is the Bakersfield Christian. They're not that far from Liberty, by the way, and I've done baseball there too. BCHS is 17-11. They won their first game against Frontier, a school from Bakersfield, a big public school of about 2,500. They beat them 80-47 in boys basketball. BCHS has a population of about 400. They're smaller than Garces Memorial. They do a little bit of recruiting, but the fact is they always have a good team and great facilities. In fact, you can fit three basketball courts in their facilities. So, at any rate, 17-11, and looking at their schedule, I have it in front of me. They play, the top teams here in the area. I'm in the top big schools. They lost to Clovis North, 71-68. They beat Clovis West, 76-70. They lost to Clovis North, 70-59. Beat Clovis West, 63-60. Lost to Bullard, 71-58. Lost to St. Joseph's in Santa Maria, 69-49. St. Joe's has only one loss this year, as the San Joaquin Memorial. They split with the HCHS in Northridge, some high school in Northridge, HCHS. They beat Troy Western twice, a loss to St. Joe's again, but they were closer this time, 72-67, beat Troy Union twice, beat Garces twice, but close games. Lost to Hoover Fresno, who is in that same division, Division III, 54-51, lost to Memorial, 67-47, beat Bullard 66-57, so they came back and beat Frozen Bullard. Beat Mishinoka Flory twice, and then played San Joaquin again and lost 18, lost to a school in Modesto and beat Frontier. So San Joaquin Memorial, Fresno, and the St. Joseph's Santa Maria, two parochial schools, kind of handled them in the four games. I think only one of those four games was BCHS competitive, but nonetheless, they played those teams, and they're very good. So in the open division, on June 11th, the number one seed, San Joaquin Memorial, is playing against St. Joseph's. In open division, you just have four teams in open division. So the number one seed, SJM, beat Clovis North, who was the fourth seed, 84-82. And St. Joseph's, Santa Maria, beat Clovis West, 87-83. St. Joseph's was number two and Clovis West number three. So the championship will be San Joaquin Memorial against St. Joseph's, and that will be on June 11th. And so the playoff situation is different. You have a lot of schools going on simultaneously. Maybe one sport is a week ahead of the other one. Like I said, they're in the second week of basketball playoffs in the central section, girls and boys. And championship games will be, I believe, on Thursday or Friday this week. Baseball is beginning their playoffs this week, and their championships will be next week. There are not any one-venue championships this year. They've had the baseball finals at Fresno State Oh, well, we had it for a couple of years. Didn't have it last year because of COVID-19. And the year before, we couldn't complete all the games there because we had a thunderstorm. But prior to that, they had the games at Rawhide Park in Visalia. And then they've had a softball championship for a number of years at Margie Wright Stadium at Fresno State, across the street from Bob Biden Field, where Fresno State plays. And I remember one year I did a couple of baseball games on a Friday night in Visalia and then stayed overnight in Fresno and did about four or five softball games Saturday at Fresno State. That was cool. And I don't know if the company that I'm working for is still doing the softball again because it's right across the street. They're on Feeder Avenue in Fresno. So things have been a little bit different. Hopefully they'll get back to normal. The state's opening up, they say, June 15th, which means full capacity at Dodger Stadium and a lot of places. But I'm kind of wondering, should we go full capacity just like that? Because most places have been, well, you look at games being played in the Midwest and the South and in the East, and it seems like they're up to about, they've been at 75% for a long time. But here in California, it's been much different. But I'm thinking, oh, you're going from about, what, 25% capacity to full? I mean, the basketball games I did this year at Liberty, the fans only sat on the opposite side. There were no fans behind us at the scores table. Just the players sat, you know, in chairs 5 feet apart from each other. The referees sat by themselves, and all the fans sat on the home side. So you have, you know, the home team on one area and the visiting team on the other area, and there was really no problems. That's the way it was for all the basketball games here locally. So the fans were on both sides. Normally, I do basketball. The visitors are behind me, and they're, you know, they like to get on the referees and on the official scorekeeper and things like that, so I could hear them very well. This year, everybody was in front of me. Now, as far as baseball, which I've done at Liberty, been a whole lot for baseball. And it seems like the stands have been packed since we started play in early April. But people are kind of spread out in baseball, and it's outside. And the people to my left, you know, 5-6 feet away, and then the guys doing the scoreboard and the music are to my right, and we're kind of blocked off in between. But whatever. It's been kind of weird, but, you know, you have to be able to adapt to these kind of measures, and that's what a lot of athletes and coaches and teams and players and fans have been doing. So I think a lot of people made the best out of it. But like I said, everything opened up June 15th, and I think they were talking about that on a show in the Sacramento area, and I gave my thoughts offline. And they said, do you think that things will be completely normal by June 15th? I said, no. That's the general plan. That's the goal. That's the objective, for things to be completely normal. We're on that path, but we're not there yet. And just because the calendar turns June 15th doesn't mean that everything's going to miraculously change, you know, like we have a magic wand. But we're on that path, and hopefully we can keep on moving in the right path. So whatever. Anyway, nice conversation with Dave Cox, and owner at U Sports Network, YSN365.com in the Sonoma area since about 2009. Interesting background, athletic communications and marketing specialist at Sonoma State University. In 2019 and 20, of course, kind of lost his job there, basically. Did play-by-play and production at KSRO in Santa Rosa. 4 years doing high school sports and football, things like that. Head baseball coach at Sonoma Academy in Santa Rosa, and also did play-by-play for NBC Sports in California. Did some schooling at Pepperdine University in Malibu and Cardinal Newman High School down south. His son is at Santa Barbara City College, and I think he's an L.A. Rams fan. So very interesting when you look at that. As I talk about the beginning of the show, good game by the Clippers yesterday, defeating Dallas by a score of 126-111. You know, the Clippers were down 0-2 in that particular series. They lost the first two games at home. Now, how many teams that lost the first two at home have come back to win a seven-game series? From about four teams? That's the most difficult way to go. And they were the first home team to win a game in that playoffs. The first six games, the team on the road won every game. But the Clippers, I think, took something out of Dallas in game six. Kawhi came alive in the fourth quarter. Kawhi is not a superb three-point shooter. He really is a great middle-range shooter, takes the ball to the rack, good passer, good rebounder, very smart. But in that game, he was feeling it. He hit three of his last four three-attempts in game six. He took over like he did with Toronto. 45 points for Kawhi. And Van, of course, had a big game yesterday, 28 points, 10 rebounds, and 9 assists, and 4 steals. He did it, man. Kawhi Leonard and Clippers win by 15 points. The key later down 81-76. And I was watching the game at a sports place, sports restaurant here in town, and Dallas could not buy a shot. And they were stuck at 76 for – they were stuck at 81 for a long time. They led 81-76, and not too long after that, it was 89-81 Clippers, then 9-81 Clippers, and that was the game. Clippers went on about a 20-4 run. Dallas just went cold, and the Clips just continued to play their game. Reggie Jackson played well. A little Kennard off the bench hit two or three threes. Morris hit a big three from the corner. Paul George didn't have a great game. He was very steady, very smooth. One thing I love about the Clippers is that they have a lot of depth, and they play extremely well, I think, throughout that series, especially in the final two games, so they move on. Now they're going to play the Utah Jazz tomorrow, and that's a match between number one and number four in that one Western Conference semifinal. Tonight, the Denver Nuggets and the Phoenix Suns are playing. Good matchup between the number three Nuggets and the number two Suns. Devin Booker, the top player for Phoenix and one of the top young players in the NBA, but he's been in the league 6 years. Number one, the point guard, very fast, can knock down the threes, take the ball to the hole, pretty good passer. He's the leader of that team, even though they have Chris Paul on it. It's Devin Booker's team. You had Chris Paul. You had Ayton a few years ago from Arizona. And so then they got Crowder from Miami, can't stand LeBron James. So they've done a good job of that team. Utah is playing without Donovan. Well, I guess Donovan Mitchell is playing now Donovan Mitchell plays for Utah. Okay. He's back. He missed some times during the course of the year. You got Rudy Gobert, their center. He's tough to handle over 7 feet. So I don't think Phoenix matches up well with Phoenix matches up well with Denver because Denver has Nikola Jokic, the Joker. He does it all. He will probably be the MVP candidate. But Denver doesn't have Jamal Murray playing. That hurts them. They've gotten by without him. But I think the farther they go and play more elite teams in the playoffs, that will hurt them. Other guys like Michael Porter Jr. has stepped up, but somewhere down the line is probably going to hurt them. So Jokic and Denver against Devin Booker, Chris Paul, Ayton, and the Phoenix Suns. And that is tonight, seed three against seed two. And then tomorrow you have Utah Jazz with Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell and company, and Jordan Clarkson, former Laker, who will probably be the sixth man of the year coming off the bench. Those guys for Utah against a very good team in the Clippers, four seed. So we'll see what happens. Utah, the top record in the NBA this year, and of course Phoenix, second seed in the West. Major League Baseball, talked about the Kansas City Royals at the Angels, the Cubs at San Diego, and Miami at Boston. At this point, the Pods are 36-25. They are a game ahead of the Dodgers, who are 34-25. Same amount of losses, but San Diego has two more wins. But San Francisco is winning that league, the National League West. And so they are two up on the Padres and three up on the Dodgers as we speak right now. Tough week for UCLA, actually. Baseball team had an okay year. They're ranked 21 going into the regional, the Lubbock Regional. They finished off at the 37-20. They lost to North Carolina 5-4 in game one, came back and beat Army 13-6. They blasted North Carolina in an elimination game 12-2, then lost to the eventual winner, Texas Tech, 8-2. But the more disappointing was the women's softball team at UCLA. The Bruins have won 12 national titles, one in 2019. Of course, that was taken away in 2020. And some of the same players that were stars on the 2019 team played this year. Some of them were fifth-year juniors, and some like Rachel Garcia, sixth-year seniors. And she was their main pitcher, and she didn't seem to quite have it in the postseason. Maybe she was tired. She had pitched over 200 innings this year, which is about third or fourth in the nation, and had 19 complete games, 7 shutouts. But there were pitchers in some other teams that were more dominant than her. But the thing about Rachel, she's a very good two-way player. She's a cleanup hitter for UCLA. So she's like about a 3.35 career hitter. And her career ERA was 1.3, but that kind of went up a notch because she lost 6-0 to Alabama in a game in which the Lady Bruins were no hit and a perfect game thrown against them. Then the following day, they lost to number one seed Oklahoma 10-3. UCLA had a 3-2 lead in that game, and then Oklahoma scored twice in the fourth inning and won it going away. And so I don't know if she pitched all the innings. I saw her pitch against Florida State when UCLA won 4-0, and Maya Brady, Tom Brady's niece, had a home run, her 14th of the year, but I didn't see too much of the other games. Any rate, you can't win every year, I know that, but UCLA, I'm sure they'll put a very decent team out there next year, and They probably have some good recruits coming up because they've been winning program for years, and people expect that at UCLA. But you know what? I need to broadcast or announce some of their games. They need Mark H. there at UCLA to broadcast or announce some of their games. UCLA baseball needs me to broadcast or announce some of their games. They have the same people doing it year after year after year after year. Yeah, I know. They live in Southern California. I don't. But I did do Cal State Northridge for 1 year, the Matadors. I was still living in Bakersfield at the time. Need some influx of new blood, man. Not young blood, but new blood. A guy with excitement. A guy that possibly helped some of the women on the team fill balls that are hit to the right or left with quickness. See, the thing is, it's not so much when a ball hits you that you can feel it. Can you feel the ball that's hit quickly to your right or to your left? And the softball throw is very short, small dimensions. You have to get rid of the ball very quickly. But the key is not getting rid of the ball. It is anticipating where the ball is going to be hit off the bat. And the problem I have a lot of people play softball is that just like when I used to coach little kids, I told Dave on the air what frustrated me about little kids, and they're younger, so I give them a break. When you hit them ground balls or pop-ups, they don't react to the ball until it's tackled to them. They don't react to the ball off the bat. And a lot of players in softball would react when the ball hit off the bat. They'd be in great position to field the ball and throw the person out at first or second base. They don't have to go to the right and backhand it or dive for the ball to the left. They would already be there fielding the ball in a throwing motion. A lot of players I see, even at the college level, they got scholarships to play. They react very slowly. So then when they make a great play, the announcers go, fantastic play? Not really. They made it look like a fantastic play because they had a bad break on the ball. That's why they made an easy play look tough. Don't be fooled by all the highlights you see on TV about what is a great play and what is not. Our number, 347-205-9631. 347-205-9631. Okay, well, you've heard me talk about Evan Hathaway was Brooklyn 65, Milwaukee 41. Don't know the score now, but, you know, Kevin Durant having his way. He had 21 points in the first half. And people don't know the story. Kyrie Irving hitting his shots. Blake Griffin, man, he's like turned back the clock. Hit 18 points. Wouldn't he have like 9 rebounds in game one? Everybody thought it wouldn't be a good pickup for the Nets. The Lakers should have gone after him. He hasn't played like this in 3 or 4 years. He's been dunking the ball. He's playing defense. Done a good job on Giannis and playing well tonight. He's playing with energy because you know why? He smells the championship. He's with the Clippers those years with CP3 and the dudes, and they came up short. He's come up short as far as winning. And so, you know, guys are older in their career. They have a chance to play with Durant and Kyrie and Harden. Whether it's on the court or not, they smell blood, man. And I think that with him, maybe he's playing over his head. That's okay. He's playing great basketball. They got a guy named James who had been kind of a flop in the NBA, playing in Europe. He did a great job in the first half. A guy named Brown, guys I don't even know are hitting shots. Joe Harris has been solid for them. It's not just the big three of Harden, Kyrie, and KD. Other players have played well. One thing about Brooklyn, they can score. They can score. You have to hit your shots. You have to score to stay with them. You know, Middleton for Milwaukee, you know, missed his first 8 shots. You can't have that against Brooklyn. I mean, it's fine. He hits 3 in a row. It's not good enough. You can't score 45 or 50 and a half against them, and you just can't be close to that team. You got to be on fire. If you're not hitting your shots, you got to create turnovers. You have to steal the ball. You have to rip rebounds away from Brooklyn. You got to do whatever you can to stop them from scoring. If they come down and hit threes and backdoor plays and they're scoring 65-70 on you and a half, you're not going to beat them. So if you're not hitting your shots, you're the best, or anybody who plays Brooklyn, you better start playing some hard-nosed defense, come up with about 15 to 20 steals in the game because you're not touching that team. Unless you're fortunate where Brooklyn has a game where they just can't make any shots or maybe somebody else gets hurt for them. But in the first 2 games without James Harden, who's nursing a hamstring injury, the big two of Kyrie and KD have been running the show. So they've lost 1 game in the postseason, but looking very good so far right now. You can get in touch with me by going to my email site. It is sportswrapnet@yahoo.com, sportswrapnet@yahoo.com. And this program is produced by Mark Mancini, and it's on Blog Talk Radio, driven by Mancini Media. I'm Mark Heffernan. And, you know, I was talking about some of the best teams here in the Central Section and what they had done this year and played over 20-some games in a lot of teams in the Bakersfield area, just 100 miles south of Fresno Falls, and only played like 8 or 9. Now, no bittersweet thing from me, Mark, because I do a lot of teams up in this area, but I think the teams do have an advantage playing 20 to 22 games as opposed to teams playing 7 or 8. And they have an advantage of just having a lot more competition in the year. Yeah, I think those teams have more talent than the teams in my immediate area, but it's definitely an advantage to play 12 more games. Now, in baseball, Liberty at this point has played about 17, 18 games. Liberty and Bakersfield are the top teams in the Fresno Close area. Are almost like normal. They played like 23, 24 games. The normal high school baseball year, regular season, you're going to play now, I'd say around 25 to 27. When I was playing like moons ago, you're up to 23, 24. Then to count the playoffs, you're closing out about 30. So a lot of the top teams, Buchanan and some of the baseball teams up in the Fresno Close area, they're close to about normal. So I guess they started earlier than we did. But a lot of teams here, like Liberty's played 17, 18, that's pretty good. But I'm sure most teams have played 15 or less. And a lot of schools have just played league games. That's it, 15. They didn't play any non-league games. They're not playing any tournaments. Because you can get anywhere from 3 to 5 games in a tournament. And most schools play in an Easter tournament. It could be in Arizona. It could be in Nevada, Southern Cal, NorCal, or somewhere else out of state. And they may play in 2 tournaments during a year. The same thing with basketball. So when you don't have basketball tournaments or baseball tournaments, you're missing out on anywhere from 5 to probably 7 or 8 games off your schedule, which you can't get back because those are tournament games. They're not necessarily double elimination either. So that's at least the kids and student athletes are playing, even though some people might be basketball and baseball players, they got to choose one over the other because basketball is like just a week ahead of baseball. And some coaches were not allowing players to play both at the same time simultaneously. Now, they could. In fact, this year, a lot of athletes could play AAU and for the high school team simultaneously, whether it's softball, soccer, basketball, or baseball, which I think is a little bit too much, but they could. But you know what? If you're playing for an AAU team and for a high school team, and your high school team has practice during the week, probably a good idea for you to show up for high school practice once in a while if you want to play on the team's games. So you have a fine line there. You're choosing one over the other, which I think is very difficult. When I was in high school, you know, I really liked to run track, but baseball is my number one sport. I would have loved to have run some track meets during the course of the baseball season. They didn't let me do that. I just ran 1 or 2 meets after the baseball season. So in the last 2 weeks of baseball, I was running with the track team, you know, doing sprint drills and that kind of stuff, and taking my baseball spikes off, putting track shoes on, and trying to do that. But you don't get in shape for track for, you know, in 10 days to 2 weeks, especially when you're running against guys that are just faster than you. There's difference between baseball speed and track and field speed. I know about that. So, you know, what can I say? So kind of a different show today. Had Dave Cox, the first portion, and hopefully we'll get my second guest on a future program. I'm trying to get Artis Gilmore, a former star in the ABA, on the show. And he says, yeah, man, I'm ready to come on, but I haven't confirmed with him. Looking for June 28th. This guy was like 7'2", played against UCLA, and they had a tough game against Sidney Wicks, who was a 6'9½ forward center for UCLA back in the day, and played for John Wooden. And Wicks had a good game against Artis, but Artis played in ABA, and I think played for Jacksonville in college. Cool dude. They call him the A-Train. So hopefully we can get him on one of these days. He was referred to me by Bob Nedelicki, who played in the ABA, and Bob knows a lot of guys like him, the Iceman, George Gervin. So we're trying to get some of these guys, you know, on the air. And ABA dudes, the guys that are still living, are trying to get some money from the NBA as far as, you know, after they retire. They haven't had much of a pension. And so we'll see what happens with that. They're working on it, and hopefully they'll get something done. So like I said, as I wrap up the program today, you've been listening to Markman Madness on Blog Talk Radio, driven by Mancini Media. My name is Mark Heffernan. Stay in touch with me by going to my email site at sportswrapnet@yahoo.com, sportswrapnet@yahoo.com. I also have a blog called Marked Men Madness. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week. God bless you. Have a great week. And go Suns. Good night.